Obviously, I do a lot of speaking, a lot of places to a lot of groups, and I can say this is the truth. This is the group I would prefer to speak to than any at all. I look at this group, this team, and I go, here's the heartbeat and leadership of the church in a very real way. So you're the guys that are making the difference and will be making the difference in lives, and I just love being here with you today. Thanks for making the time to come. Let's pray. That's when we pray, and then we'll start. Father, thank you for the privilege to team up here together and to think together about what you're going to do over the next year. We thank you in advance by faith for a great spiritual formation that's going to take place in hundreds and hundreds of lives, even because we have been called to this place to lead. We pray, Father, that you would give us a commonality of sight, that we might see what it is we're about, that we might be focused as never before, and that we might see your kingdom come in lives as never before. So thank you for this time. We pray you would bless it in the great name of our Savior Jesus. Amen. I know we've got probably have a few officers that are here, and I will tell you now, I meant to say it at the Thursday night meeting that there would be a lot of overlap. I am glad you're here, and I hope you'll stay, but you would be welcome to leave if you feel that 80% overlap might be more than you would want to handle. But Thursday night, we had all the officers together, and some of the same content I went over with them. So apologies, I meant to tell you at that time, but hindsight, glad you're here, and maybe good I didn't mention it. So... But I was asked a question a few weeks ago. Somebody asked me, what's the greatest challenge that you see facing Perimeter Church for the years to come? I thought that is a great question. What would be the greatest challenge? I bet we'd come up with different thoughts, but immediately my mind hit on one thought. I said, I think the greatest challenge that we have is to be a church that walks by faith. And the reason is because there was a day... years ago where that was the only option we had. We had no resources, we had no staff, we had no facility, we had, you know, finances, nothing. We just didn't have anything, and it was like, God, if you don't do a good work here, if you don't provide, we don't survive. And now there's a sense in which we have, call it in the negative sense, don't mean it this way, but we have a machine. It's running, it's operative. We have facilities. We have staff, we've got resources financially, and it's very easy just to think, just let it keep going. Well, that's the worst thing we could ever seek to achieve. God says without faith it's impossible to please God, so we want to be faith-oriented always. And so I even look in my own experience, you know, beginning my 34th year this last month or a couple months ago, I look at it and I think, you know, how many years? I know there's less years left in my ministry by far than there are what I've already been able to accomplish in terms of years. And I think, you know what, last thing you want to do is mess it up now, you know, and be known as, you know, that's a shame. An idiot really screwed up at the end pretty badly and, you know, wow. But when you live by faith, you take risk, do you not? And what happens if you take risks? You can fail. So what you're doing is saying, if we want to live by faith, we've got to risk failure. And, you know, it's easy to be failure avoidant. You just want to get away from the risk of such. But, you know, there's something that I fear even greater, and that's not taking the risk and maybe living through ministry without faith. So we want this church to be a church that operates and lives by faith. One of the things that faith is going to mean for this church is that it remains healthy. We've got to do by faith what it takes to keep this church healthy. And if for this church to be healthy, it's got to keep growing. And I want to put a context around our call to discipleship, and then I want to focus in a few minutes on the discipling role that we have. But I want us to see the context of the importance for your church that it be a growing body. I don't know if you understand, when I talk about growth, the challenge that there is to growth. You know, every church, in my opinion, has a growth capacity. It's not that every church that does its job, it's going to, for sure, keep growing. That is not the case. If you're a church of 100 people and you reach 10 people, you've grown by 10%, and that's considered a very, very, very good church growth, 10%. Well, that's one thing, but when you get up to be 5,000, then you grow by 10%, you do the math. There's 500 people that you have to reach per year. Most churches have a number of people that they reach year in and year out, regardless of their size. If you look at Perimeter Church, we've been winning the same number of people or adding the same number of people, basically the same, year in and year out. When we were 1,000 less than we are today, it was 300 or 400 a year. Now it's 300 or 400 a year, and it just seems to be. That's what happens. Churches have a growth capacity. Then what happens is they hit a size. You think about it, if we have 500 people or 5,000 people, you've got, well, let's say 200, let's say, that are leaving every year, not because they're upset with the church and now they don't like the church anymore. They're moving to a location maybe in town that's too far traffic-wise to get here, or they're moving out of town, or something has happened that is, you know. And so you've got to grow by several hundred just to keep up with where you were. So it's not that you're not growing. You're growing, but you're not getting bigger. Do you follow? And so the realities exist. For a church to grow is a very daunting task, and particularly for a larger church. Let me ask you this. When you think of a church that's 10,000, think of a 10,000-person church. Let's go, maybe there's 20,000. Let's say 20,000. Is there a 20,000-member church that you can think of that you would consider, by whatever you think is healthy, a healthy church? I bet you'd say no. Most time when you get to a certain size, you say, I don't think that'd be a church that I'd want to go to. Why? Because I think it's not the healthy church that I want to be a part of. And you can stair-step that down to whatever size, and I don't want to bring churches into the picture, but many of us would say, that's not the picture of healthy church that I like. So here's the greater challenge, to be a church that grows and remains healthy. Well, this last month, I had my week away where I spend time every three times a year or so. I go away, and I just spend alone, focused time thinking and praying and just long range and asking God, you know, and just it's just a personal time to be with God and be thinking long term. And the major issue that I took with me for that week was to sit down for hours and hours thinking this question: how do we grow and remain healthy? And I put a little tagline to that, and that is breaking the code. I think there's a sense in which if we're going to be a church that lives by faith, maybe what we need to do is try to break the code. How can a church keep growing healthily? I mean, just healthily keep growing. And even though you're a certain size, you can just keep growing and keep growing and keep growing. And that's when I spent my time. And that's when I come back with a passion, when I sense that the Lord has spoken about something. And that's how I feel coming back from this time away. And so my first thing I really wanted to do is I wanted to get the troops together. I want to get the staff together. I want to get the officers together. I want to get the discipleship leaders together. And I want to share this is what I think we need to be doing and see if the officers and leaders agree. And if so, then we say, okay, staff, this is what we're going to do. And then we go to the leadership of the church otherwise and say, okay, let's get on board. Let's try to do it and see what happens. So that's the backdrop to all we're talking about. By the way, as we think about growing healthily, we have a unique challenge at Perimeter to do so. And I say to grow. We have a unique challenge to grow. Everybody has a challenge to grow healthily. But we have even a challenge to grow for who we are. Here are the reasons. Two. One, our complexity. I'd love for you to understand the fact that you have, for good or bad, you have a very complex church here. Complexity is not a formula for rapid growth. Simplicity is the formula for rapid growth. Many of you are familiar with the book that's come out. It's a very good book. It's called The Simple Church. And I always say about it, I think the title is a terrible title. I don't think there's such thing as a simple church that is a healthy church. The title, I think, should be, but it wouldn't sell enough, they wouldn't do this, would be Simpler Church. maybe some churches have become too complex unnecessarily. But complexity is actually a part of being healthy. If you think about it, theology. We have a very complex theology. Would you agree with that? I mean, who wouldn't think? Oh, we have a complex theology. I'll tell you what's a non-complex theology. A very, very, very noted evangelical church that you would recognize. One of their elders and I were talking and said, you know, in our church, we're not allowed to use the word doctrine. That's a no-no word in our church. Because once you get into doctrine, you start having people have differing opinions, and differing opinions drive people away. We like to keep it simple. We believe in Jesus. We believe in his saving work. And, you know, that's what all Christians will agree on, and we want to be in the realm of what Christians believe. He said, you know, we don't want to talk about creation versus this. We don't want to talk about this versus that. We don't want to talk about this. Those things we just don't do. We will not have a curriculum because we don't want them to hear that the church is saying this is what we believe, because they may disagree, and that's going to cause people not to want to be a part. And, you know, and I hear that, and I think, well, that's simplicity, but it's not healthy simplicity. So we have a very complex theology. We have a very complex philosophy of ministry. You know, everybody says, focus on one thing. Do one thing well. And we look at our mission for the vision of our church, and our vision has to do with you know, areas of city transformation. We're dealing with church planting. We're dealing with discipleship as part of a philosophy of ministry that is very complex. Just, you know, what you have to do to make discipleship work and have small groups and discipleship. Most churches say, we just have small groups. That's all we do. And so all of their frontier, frontline leaders are at the front door to catch new people coming in, whereas many of our frontline leaders are wedged back in the life of the church, and they have to come through a step or two before they find and get a part of some of our best leadership in our church. So philosophically, we're somewhat complex. Ecclesiastically, we are very complex. If you want a simple ecclesiology, then all you do is you have a leader, and he's in charge, and that's it. You don't have to have boards. And one of the most noted pastors in America, you would all recognize his name. He and I were talking one day, and he said, you know what I've done? He said, I fired all of my elders. I said, you what? He said, I fired all my elders. And I said, well, what do you mean you fired them? He said, well, they weren't doing what I told them to do. He said, they're inhibiting the growth of the church. And I've got to have people that say yes. So I've hired all my elders. And that way it works where I get to take them where we need to go. And you would be much applauding this church if I told you the name of the church, because, well, they have a benevolent dictator. He's a good man. And God's used this church in a mighty way, but I don't think that's healthy. And who knows who the next person is going to be in there that might be not so benevolent, and who knows what happens even at that. And so our ecclesiology is somewhat complex. The second thing is not just our complexity. We're very counterculture. And you ought to know this about your church as you start discipling or you continue to disciple. We need to upfront understand, we are counterculture. We're counterculture in the fact that we're complementarian in what we teach, and that is as opposed to egalitarian. The two terms, if you're not familiar, if you've been leading or in discipleship, you've been learning and teaching what we call complementarian view of marriage, that the two complement each other. They're equal and they complement, but they have different roles to complement. And so we have leadership in marriage, and we have the women in marriage as the submissive ones, and the world today goes, you've got to be crazy. Just come to Inquirers and watch me spend 30 minutes explaining that, and you don't hear it. But if you listen close enough, you'll probably get a little bit of, you know, and I watch people going, as I'm speaking, when I see, you know, I say, oh, I know what she believes, and I know what he, oh, okay, I probably won't see them again next week, will we? And it's counterculture. They say, you got to be crazy. You know, just the fact that we have elders that are only men. Now, that's challenging to our own people that love this church sometimes. They say, I don't understand, and I don't, you know, and but we believe it's biblical, and we say that's what we think is good and right and so forth. We're non-Baptistic. You know, most churches grow, even as we have. You know how large churches grow, by the way, do you not? Truthfully, you know how they grow? They grow by getting other Christians to like their church better than the other churches. I'm telling you, that's the way churches grow. And you do something that kind of sparks and makes people, ooh, and they'll leave that church, they'll come to this one. I've said to our elders on numerous occasions, we've had years where we had profound growth. We just recently had one. I went, wow, look at all the people. Well, man, and I go, why are we so excited? You know that so-and-so church is having all kinds of struggles, and those people are coming here now, don't you? And we're excited about another church struggling? That's not what we're excited about. That's not the thing we're looking for. And what I think is when a church starts winning more people to faith than they're losing through natural attrition, you've probably got a fairly healthy church at that point in terms of outreach. Doesn't mean you're healthy otherwise, but you're becoming healthy in terms of outreach. But we're non-Baptistic. We believe in church discipline. Do you understand what some people think about that? I remember having a guy led to the Lord, and we were sitting together one evening talking, he was excited about coming to Perimeter, and he was going to join Perimeter, and you know now he's a new believer, and he's all excited about his faith, and he said, you know something, it's amazing that I'm coming back to church. I said, really, why? He said, because I used to go to church back when I was a young man. I went to church all the time, and he said, you know what happened? Somebody did something pretty sinful. I don't even remember what it was, but the church disciplined them. Can you believe that? And then he says, I will never, ever again go to a church that does church discipline. And I'm sitting there talking to him, and he's about to go through inquiries, and I'm going, would you hang on to that thought for a little while, and one day, could we discuss that again and remember what you just said? He's an elder in the church now, and he's been on discipline teams, so... He survived it. But you know what? Not everyone survives that. When they hear discipline, they go, accountability? I don't care for accountability. I don't want that kind of stuff. You know, we've kind of had a reputation of being somewhat of the Marines of the faith in this community and from many years ago. And, you know, Marines don't have, you know, huge enlistments, but they get good enlistments. And I think that's what we've been privileged to enjoy and why so many of you are here. So... we're far from a perfect church, and I'm not holding us as a standard among others, but I'm saying this, we are committed to being healthy. That's one thing. Growth is not the ultimate end all. It's healthy and grow being healthy. That's what we're trying to do. I'm going to pass a number of things that I shared with others about typical ways churches grow, and they're good ways and so forth, but let me tell you about how a church should grow. In my opinion, a church should be growing by life-on-life reproduction. Whether it be that the individual is reproducing, he or she is taking a group that's reproducing, people that are reproducing, but it's an idea of a reproduction process. If you look at any organism that's alive, you can go from a human down to any organism, anything that's healthy reproduces. At a certain point, when it quits reproducing, you say there's something unhealthy here. There's something wrong with the system, you know, we've had a child who's battled infertility for several years, what's the problem? Well, there's an issue wrong with my body. It's not working correctly. Well, that's what's true of the church if it's not reproducing. And so what we want to do is think, how do you do that? And the way we think that happens is by being extremely contagious where we live, work, and play. Building life so that people look at life and go, your life is different than my life. I want a life like your life. I want to know how you have the life you have. Tell me more about your life. So it's all about life and producing that kind
of life that attracts others that in turn become followers of Jesus. We do it by loving and serving. It's by being a serving and loving community. Carol told me a story last night. She was leaving the church, and as she was leaving, somebody drove by and asked her a question just driving by and said, "How do you get in this big place? Where's the entrance? I mean, how do you?" And so she explained and said, "Well, what I saw a sign and it said something about dance classes. What is that?" And she told him, and then she said, "Well, let me tell you why I'm even here. I want to come to this church. I want to try this church." And Carol said, "Well, why is that?" And she said, "Because I lease a number of homes in the community, and there's one of my ladies, a lady that's leasing one of my homes, has come into very hard times, and she's not able, hadn't been able to make her payment for her housing, and I got a $300 check from this church this week, and they're helping her out, and that blew my mind. I said, I got to go to that church. I want to see what that church is all about. So she said, I'm planning to come here. I think she's coming today. And so, you know, you go, wow, that's the way it ought to be, serving and loving and people saying, what a good church for the community and so forth. The key word there is going to be reproduction, and I'm going to come to that in a big way right now. Here's the vision that I sense for us becoming a growing church, even as large as we are, that remains healthy, or what I might call breaking the code. There were three areas to explore. As I sat there for hours and hours, I said, well, there are really three areas that have got to be the focus of our attention. One is the expansion and enhancement of our worship. We do know that worship attracts people. You know, it's where people first touch much of church. And I hate that's the case. I really wish it weren't that way, but it is. And a lot of people, where am I going to go to church? And, you know, even lost people like this lady, you know, where will I try church? Her first touch in this church is going to be her just walking into a service of worship. And so, you know, expansion and enhancement of what we're doing. And we're focusing hard on that. And as you know, we've got a chapel service that's opening up, and you're going to be hearing very, very, very soon about what that's going to involve. And I'll give you kind of an inside step on that right now. What we're going to be doing is we are going to take the Sunday after our 16th dedication, the very next week, we're going to start opening up the chapel on Sunday mornings for prayer. And we just think it's a time to pray. Evening at 7 o'clock, we're going to have worship, and it'll be the same service. Well, it won't be the same service, it'll be the same message, but there'll be music and everything. It'll be live. Everything will be, you know, just another worship service on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. But we're going to use the morning hours for prayer, and we just think it's the thing to establish and start. And I want this to be a focus season on prayer anyway, which, by the way, is the second area, which is prayer. We've got to focus on prayer. And so I'm going to be calling the church to a time of fasting, whether it be a time of a prolonged period or a short period, or fasting from one thing versus something else. That's, you know, everybody can make their decisions. But I want to see a season of fasting as we move into this new opportunity of expansion and worship. So prayer will be the second. And then when we come to the first of the year, we will then move to two Sunday morning worship services in there as well. And we want the Sunday night. You're going to be pretty well blown away when you see the chapel. It'll knock your socks off is what will happen. But what really hits you is when you see it in the evening, and particularly around a 7 o'clock hour. The glass just comes alive. It blows you away. And because the morning is going to have a screen, we'll continue the gym service. But just like the gym service, we have a screen, and we have to black out all the lights, all the windows. We have blackout curtains to be able in the daytime to see. And therefore, you're going to lose a lot of the beauty in the morning for part of that time. So we want to have everybody have a great touch on Sunday evening and be able to see what it's like. And we're going to have a plan so that not everyone shows up one week, and we'll announce that later. But then the third is where I want to focus with you guys, and that's multiplication of discipleship. Multiplication of discipleship. If we were in a an armed service, a branch of the armed service, and we had a leader. I know they use different names for different, you know, different divisions, but whoever your military leader would be would receive kind of a order, this is what we're going to do, and here's the role we play in the effort to win this war. We're going to use this kind of artillery. We're going to use this kind of a strategy. We're going to do these kind of things, and there is a plan that everybody has to get on board, right? And in doing so, you have the great hope of winning. You know good and well if every soldier decides what he or she now would do. Well, I got this gun at home. I've hunted with it for years. I don't want to use this big old heavy, you know. It just keeps going bang, 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 bang. I like mine. It just goes bang. And then I get to reload and bang, I like that, you know. And so I'm just going to use my own weaponry. I think I'll do that. Now, by the way, you know, the strategy that's been handed down, I just don't think it's the right thing. You know, instead of going north, I think we need to go east and around. And so I'm going to go around there, okay? So y'all do whatever y'all want to do. But I really need to do what I think is best for me, okay? What happens? You don't have an army anymore, right? And you have very little chance of accomplishing what we need to accomplish. Well, through the years, we have been very good to focus on discipleship, meaning we've been able to focus on war. We've been able to focus on battle. But what we've had way too much of is, I'll fight the way I like to fight. I'll organize my leadership and my group, and I'll do what I want to do. And it just whatever feels good to me, I like that, and my ladies like it, my men like it, and that's what we want to do. We want to like what we're doing. And I go, well, it depends on what you want. If you like to fight and you want to fight the way you like to fight, that's one thing. If you like to win a war, then you do something differently, right? We all get on board. So I started thinking, you know, one, confessing my lack of leadership. One of the reasons that we've not been more focused and directive is because when you do that, people don't like it. Now, a lot of people like it, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people just love winning the war, and they go, I don't care. Whatever it takes to win the war. Yeah, let's go. Yeah, thank you for giving us something that maybe we can win the war. But other people go, well, I really enjoy the fight, and that's what I'm all about, and I don't like having to do that. And you know what? If you're insecure like I am, you don't like to hear people say no. You don't like all the pushback and the mean, angry, you know, communications and all that stuff. And so you go, okay. So what I do is I appeal to people. Would you please do this? And I give all the reasons why. And you know what? I can convince a small percentage of people to agree. And with that little percentage, we kind of move along and see, I think, really good things happen, and others have not as good things as a rule. You have a few mavericks, but you can't live on maverick life. So yeah, I'm sitting there going, okay, here's the real issue is with me. Am I willing to say this is what we got to do and to challenge people and say, now, by the way, I can't make people in a church do it. I don't have the authority. I can't say you will, and if you don't, let me tell you what's going to happen to you. We're not going to do that. But what I am going to say is that this is what we're doing, and I'm saying to the staff, you got to do it. We're going to have a group because I can fire them, you know? And they know that they have employment. They're getting, and so you can say to an employee, you must, and you do that with people that you have that have employees. You do that. You say, this is what you and I don't care what they say. You say, I'm sorry. You got to do this. But from there on, obviously, we can't do that. So what I'm doing is I'm saying, you know, as close as I can come to say you must, I want to say this is what we've got to do right here. And here's what I think it is. We have got to take our journey groups, and we have to have classes within our journey group. You have a first-year class, a second-year class, and a third year. I don't care if you call them rookies, veterans, and assistant leaders, whether you call them sophomores, juniors, or seniors. I don't care about naming at all. I'm just saying we need three classes. You need people that are going out each year, people that are coming in each year. And what you're doing is you are every year seeking that as many of the third class as possible that you can have prepared and who have hearts and willingness will be actually starting their group after 3 years. We have groups in this church that have 6 and 7 of our most long-term faithful members, and they've been in their group for 10 years. So what happens? They get through 3 years, they go, well, what do you want to do now? We've been through the journey, what do you want to do now? And what you find out is the journey is to them a curriculum. It's not a way of life, it's a curriculum. Well, curriculums don't change people. And so you just sense that, hey, I'm not here to prepare you for something. What's happened is we've gotten a mindset in discipleship that says we're here to fix us. We want to make our lives better. And maybe fix for us means I need friends. Fix for me means, well, I need some teaching. Fix for me means I need, and I got to get me better. And it's so self-centered. God doesn't, he doesn't find honor through it. And what we're doing is saying, well, aren't we glad we're in discipleship? But, you know, in reality, we're in self-ship, you know. How can I help me? But when you take a different approach, you say, you're coming into this group to get prepared to do something very important by becoming someone who's very honoring to the Lord. And what I want to do is to take, you know, 1, 2, or 3 years, depending upon what you want to go through this, and I want to take you and I want to help you in spiritual formation to get you to a place that, Lord willing, maybe it's not the case, but hopefully in 3 years, that you're going to be doing in the lives of other people what you've watched me do in your lives. Well, immediately when you come to that, you're now not just one of many peers in a group. You no longer can say, okay, I'm the moderator of the group, and, you know, three of you are probably much further along than I am spiritually, and, you know, it doesn't matter because we're just here to kind of facilitate and be together and enjoy each other and learn from each other. And once you go there, you've lost it. It ain't going to happen. It's got to be, I'm here to help you. And so what you do is you start looking for young believers who are hungry and ready to be fed and to grow up. And I'll tell you what, you can take a very, very young believer and you can stamp them in a big way, where you take someone who is pretty old in their ways and their faith. They're not very malleable. They're just, you know, yeah, tell me. Good. But that's it. I tell people wherever I train in discipleship around the country when I'm talking to leaders, I say, you know, to me, the worst thing I could ever experience in discipleship would be have 8 elders in my group. That would be deadly. It would be painful. I would hate it because I wouldn't see the ahas and the yes and the I'll do whatever it takes. Because there's a little bit of, but I tell you what, you can take some of those same elders and you can put them over a group of young people and their own heart comes alive. And something happens and they start going, yeah. And boy, you just, you know, you know, the old adage, you can't keep it unless you give it away. That's what happens. You just renewed. It's the new class every year that ramps me up. It's amazing. And I get thrilled by looking at the second and third year and seeing them. But it's that first year when I'm seeing the ahas and the wows, and they are so impacting the older guys that have been in there, that have been particularly been Christians longer period of time. And interesting, the older Christians are offering a maturity and a perspective and an insight to the younger, whether it be in spiritual formation or family or business, that the young guys just go, wow, thank you, particularly if they're younger ages. So, you know, it doesn't matter age, and that's not the issue, but I'm just saying in the faith, look for younger people who say, I'd count it an honor to be under you because you've got something to teach me. That's when you've got discipleship going on. Then you're intentional about taking them to the place that they're leading as well. The way I see it is that if we are healthy as a discipleship team, there are people being introduced to Jesus where we live, work, and play as a group, right? There should be a relatively high, you know, I'm going to call it chance. We know all how I'm using the word, but there should be a relatively high chance that somebody's coming to faith through 6, 8 people over a 3-year period, right? Or to say a 1-year period. There's a high likelihood that somebody is coming to faith in Jesus. Where do they go to get discipled? Well, the best place for a baby who's grown in a womb to be raised is by that parent in their home, right? So we don't, you know, have pregnancies and then give them away to another. I mean, that's something unhealthy when you do that. What you want to do is keep them in your own home. And so there should be new people coming into the group that way every year just because they've come to faith. I don't bring them in mid-year. I work with them on an individual basis and keep touch with them and get them in a Bible study, a small group. And I keep saying, they look forward to September because in September, we're going to really get some great stuff, all right? That's what we're really excited about come September. So that's the way you keep new people coming in as well. What I like to see is when someone gets through their second year, now they are, and they know this is coming because they heard it from the very beginning, you now have an opportunity to go through a third year. We have a three-year journey curriculum, but it's a two-year journey. Unless you're now telling me with integrity, it is your intention to do something in year four with other people. If you're saying, you know, I've decided this is really more about me and getting me healthy and getting me learning and, you know, all right, fine, I'm going to use that position for somebody else. And what I'll do if I get someone like that is I'll go to someone in the church that I see has been in discipleship and I think needs to be renewed, and I'll go, would you come in for a third year? And would you be committed? If you're not committed to leading somebody next year, I'm going to find somebody else. I don't want to waste this spot, but would you be open to doing that? I need you to come in a third-year role. Some say yes, some say no. So that's the way that can happen. I'm not so concerned about the size of the group, but quite frankly, I think that a group in each class should have between two and three in a class. I think that gives you, that's my experience. If I get one in a class, it's too small, somebody's out of town, somebody drops out, you get five in a class, 15, you know, it's too big. I've had 11 in my group, and it's worked, you know, obviously. You know, maybe two in a class, three in a class, somewhere in that neighborhood, I think is ideal. And one class may differ than the next class because of who you found and whatever reasons, new people coming in. But where there's space, and if I'm not too big, what I want to do is say to those coming into their third year, would you like to bring somebody in with you for your third year? And whoever you bring in knows they're going out with you next year so that they'll be a second-year person in your group. And that way you're birthing that group initially in your group. So that gives them a little head start. Then they can stay kind of committed to that person or whatever they choose to do. So that's basically the way I think we've got to do it. We've got, I don't know how many hundreds of leaders. And I'm praying for 50. Say, God, if you'll just give 50 that would be committed to this. And I'm not foolish to think everybody, I know this when I share this with the staff. I had one of our staff members come to me yesterday and said, Randy, you shared, this particular staff came to the officer meeting and heard me share virtually the same stuff on discipleship. And said, is this what you shared with the staff? I said, well, I didn't share this much, but the piece about discipleship, yeah, I did share that. Well, I missed it, and I need to listen to the CD on this thing, but said, man, I had several staffs that said, I'm just so demotivated. I am so, my morale is down because we're having to do discipleship this way. Well, I know that... Some of your morale is going to be down. You're going to go, I'm not going to do it for a minute. But I'm hoping if we find 50, I'm saying, Lord, if you give us 50 that'll do this, I think we can change this church. I think we can change the community. If we could get 100, oh, Lord, thank you. If we got 200, unbelievable. But I'll just say, Lord, give me a remnant. If you'll give me just 50 that will go into discipleship, will orient their people well, will follow the plan, and work that plan well, I think we're going to see something unusual happen. It's going to be called multiplication. I love to do the math of this thing. And you've heard the story of every group, you know, had so many people go out of their group and so on. Well, this is simple. Just for 5 years, if we found
If we found 50 groups, 5 years is a long time, but you know what? It's not so long that it doesn't hold some sense of capability of hitting some, you know, purity. It gets less pure as it goes further and further. But just 5 years, if a group only had five people, which I hope our groups have a few more. I think seven is the minimum I'd want to be finding. But if it only had five, in 5 years with only 50 groups, we have 8,000 people that have gone through discipleship. That's more than the number of people that come here to worship. That means something good's happening, isn't it? You know the church in Korea. And some of you have heard me tell the story where the leading church consultant of that time, it's been a couple decades ago, but he shared the story that he had gone over to consult with Pastor Kim in the Yoda Island Church there. That's the largest church, I'm sure, in the world. And they've been growing by 20% every year. And they got up to 100,000. That didn't stop them. They got up to 200. That didn't stop them. Got up to 400,000. That didn't stop them. Got them to 600,000. And I've been to this church. It blows your mind. And so this consultant named Carl George, he asked Pastor Cho. He said, "Pastor Cho, how do you do this? You're the only church in the world. You keep growing, and there's no sense of which you still can't hit 20%. You hit 20% year in and year out, year in and year out. How do you do it?" He said, "Oh, very simple." I said, "How?" "All we do is we put everybody in groups of 10. All right? And then what?" "Well, each group responsible to win two people." Very simple. So, of course, Carl George is thinking like you and I are thinking and says, "Well, I understand, but what happens about the groups that don't win two people?" He looked up, he said, "Oh, they do." He said, "Well, I mean, I'm sure not all groups do. I'm talking about the exceptions that don't." He said, "No, they do." So he said, "I got a little frustrated thinking he's lying or he can't be accurate." So he said, "Well, all right, well, let's assume that something happened one year and there was a group that didn't. What would you do?" He looked up, he said, "Oh, we discipline that group. Church discipline. 10 people who can't win two people in one year not following the Lord. Jesus said, 'Follow me. I make you fishers of men.' They're not following." Now, I'm not proposing church discipline. I am too insecure for that. And maybe a little too bright. But what I am saying is, there's a church that went to their leadership and said, "This is the way it works. You can multiply." And how many of those groups said, "We don't like two new people because new people change us. And, you know, and then we, you know, we like to be able." I've heard that we love to share our laundry and new people you can't do. I said, "Oh, forget your laundry. You know, send it out." But let's think about kingdom. Let's think about the community. Let's think about how, and my prayer would be this. This would be the doom to failure for the future, lest God be in it. You know how 30 years ago, in the last 30 years, there was the cell church. Carl George came up with the concept of cell church. And it was to put everybody in little groups. And this was before small groups were very popular in America. They were highly suspicioned. And he did a job to convince, and used his influence, and they convinced the world church, literally, that small groups is the way to do ministry. Good. Well, it wasn't so good. Because small group meant shepherding group. And the whole thought was, this is how you shepherd and care for your people. The pastor can't do it, and the churches can grow large if the pastor doesn't have to attend to every person. So you get shepherding groups, and the leaders shepherd their people. Well, what they were doing was saying, this is how you become a home. To the exclusion of mission, but here's how we become a home. Then the wave that came next was through Willow Creek Community Church. And it was this. What we do is we reach lost people. We're going to reach lost people. And the next thing you know, you had the term seeker church. And I talked to I can't tell you the number of people that planted churches over the years that come to me and say, "I'm planting a church." They say, "Oh, tell me about it. It's going to be a seeker church." "Oh, really? That was the model. Everyone wants a seeker church." Well, People know now, secret church. In fact, talk to pastors and they talk about the cell church. They go, been there, done that, huh? Well, why? Because it was a home. That's what it was. And now, what are people saying about secret church? Don't care about the secret church. I mean, that thing is so out of date now. It's, oh, no. Well, what was wrong with it? It was a mission. But when you bring those two together, where does that happen? I think it's through discipleship. It's life on life. It's missional discipleship. Would not it be wonderful to see globally in 15, 20 years that the whole thought of church became healthy and life on life? Oh, my goodness. Now we're talking home and mission brought together. I know of no place to care for people and help people become missional better than discipleship. Small groups don't make people missional. Discipleship has the possibility. Not that everyone becomes missional, but now you've got the possibility. As we know, we're supporting, you know, we're coaching, we're supporting. We've got that upper level going on that is so important. So anyway, that's the thought. You know, there are two kinds of groups. There are small groups, good. They're journey groups, as we call them, or discipleship. There are two kinds of discipleship group. They're those that are basically small groups with a curriculum, and their leader's a facilitator. We got a lot of those groups going on right now. We need to see as many of those transform to become groups where the leader becomes the mentor, becomes the discipler. The leader takes on responsibility for the disciple to go into a spiritual formation opportunity. They have to choose to do it, but at least the opportunity is presented, and there's modeling and there's help given. One of the things I want to share that we're starting this year, that I'm starting, I'm really excited about it, and that is that I'm going to do a weekly coaching session that's online. So anybody can go on and see how I coach a leader, or basically how I lead my group. I'm going to do my group a week ahead, and then I'm going to go the next day, and I'm going to have videotaped a 20, 30 minutes, I don't know, short as we can make it and still get it, do a good job, and say, this is what I think you ought to consider doing with your group next week when you meet with your group. And I hope that you'll plan your own plan. When I used to coach a group of leaders, I would say, you come with your plan to our coaching session as if I'm not going to tell you a thing. And then after I've talked to you about it, you can, if you feel it needs upgrading by something I've said, then upgrade it. If not, you're in good shape. So you always know you're going to be in good shape. You've either got yours or you've got yours and mine to work with. That's the way I hope this would be done. And that everyone would prepare their group and everyone would be ready. And then I'll coach and I'll do it early in the week so that the next week you'll be able to utilize that. Okay? So hopefully that'll be of help. Let me open it to the floor to questions and, you know, anything you'd like to push back or challenge or think about or ask or add. All right. So at the orientation, am I going to walk through this? Not in this way. I want this to be the leader who takes it on, because if someone's not, I put them in a very awkward position. Well, how come? Well, I'm not. I'm rather say to you in a private setting like this, this is where we're going. Will you sign up to this end? And then you'll tell your people that. And I will say something tomorrow night like, there are different approaches, what I'm really encouraging, you know, and I'll push a little bit, but I'm not going to say this is what I'm asking you all, you know. That's going to be done here today. Okay?
Very interesting what you're saying, because I came out of an exact group that you were describing. That's why I'm here. That's why I want to start a new discipleship group, because I'd been in a group that invited me in, but it was that very comfortable stay. They'd been together over 10 years. And it was, you know, basically guys together. And but I realized this is not what I wanted. And they're great guys, but there was no intention of ever multiplying or growing. What I would suggest is you need to talk to those groups and say, you need to disband those groups and restart. Go to new. You know, you're right. You might be in Korea after that, but that's okay.
I'm not going to repeat all that, obviously, but it may have gotten picked up close enough here. But
You know, the idea is in a group last year that was like the group I mentioned that was not doing it the right way, and an encouragement, disband those groups. You know what? I'm with you. But I think what I'd say is not disband them. Pray that they get dismantled and pray that they die. Pray that something, the group, not the individuals. But you never know. They could be tithers. But I'm teasing. I'll get, all right, is that all you care? But I do think this, that in our ministry with our leaders and, you know, that are over discipleship, that we're looking for that. And I want to alert the group tomorrow in the orientation that there are some among us that are not going to do it exactly, you know, the way we think it probably is best. And you need to be aware of that. And this is what you want to look for. And what I'm going to say is not so much the classes. I don't want to focus on that. But what I do want to focus on is this really discipling or is it a small group using the journey? Those are the two different options that are available. And we're trying to get more and more and more of our leaders to go to the journey group that's discipleship rather than small group that's using the journey curriculum. So that's the kind of approach that we'll take.
Mm-hmm. Randy, when we have tried to bring in those first-year people, mm-hmm. I'll give you one example. We have one couple, because we do a couple's discipleship where we split up at the last hour for prayer and accountability. We're going through the journey, and we had known this couple through a Christian school for about a year, so we invited them in. And after about 6 weeks, mentoring, reaching out, accountability, you know, memorizing the verse, the husband said, "I'm not coming anymore," because it's just, quote his words, "it's too Jesus-y." So we kept loving him, and, you know, we just said, "If you're not ready, it's okay. You know, if you're not ready, it's okay." We continued to see him because our kids were still at the same Christian school, mm-hmm. and we just tried to still be friendly and so in hopes that he would want to come back. So that's, how long do you need to know somebody before you invite them to the church, into the group? Because we don't want to turn them off by, I mean, we weren't singing in tongues. We weren't doing anything. We were just going through the journey. So,
wonderful question. You've raised a couple of issues that I'm going to address right now, if I could. One, outsiders to the church coming into discipleship. The only people, this is the plan we're using. If you're going to be off track if you do it otherwise. The plan that we're using is that you go with people who are a part of this church. Or you don't think they're Christians who have just come to faith. Or they are in a church that you don't believe is really Bible-centered, Christ-centered at all, and you wouldn't mind them leaving that church. We are not trying to get people to come from other churches. We have people, actually, from year to year that can't get in discipleship. There's no room for them. It seems a little odd that we're taking this people from this church and we're taking these people from this church and our people are going, "I can't get in discipleship." But there's a bigger reason not to. I want everything to be holistic in our group. And so I say, I want everybody to go to inquirers. Oh, you don't go because you're not a member here. Now in our group, let's talk about the, oh, you're not. Then we start talking about this particular, you know, maybe the message that, you know, it may not be me. It may be one of the other teaching members. And somebody, because, oh, and we let's talk about it. Oh, well, you know, she's not a member here, and that would make her feel a little outside. We'll talk about that on our own. And all of a sudden, you can't bring in the issues of the life of our church. And so I want it to be all holistic that we're, you know. And then there's an issue of that needs to go further to discipline. Well, they're not a member here. We can't do that. I mean, this needs a shepherding committee here. Oh, we can't do that. They're not here. It shortcuts the whole system, in my opinion. The other is, and this is where I'm going to get some slaps, but I'm not scared. No. I don't think couples groups is a way to go. And here's why. Couples groups are wonderful if you have no plan to multiply. The minute you start thinking multiplication, the plan is dead. It's good for 1 year. What you do is you say, oh, all the group guys in my group, good, happen to have wives that work well to be in my wife's group. That's good for 1 year. Now, what happens if I have to knock him out of my group? Because he's not been faithful. I had to do that with a guy. And by the way, I never knock somebody out of my group. People knock themselves out of the group. And so I had a guy that knocked himself out of the group this year. Now, are you permitted to come to our couples meeting or not? And do you leave? Do you have to go to another room when we start meeting as the guys? Here's the next complication. Hopefully, men and women are winning people to Christ. So they win George to Christ. But Betty is not a Christian. Does she come to your group now as a non-Christian who's not going to keep the standards of discipleship? Or are you going to have one single person who's actually married whose spouse does not come to the group? You see what happens when you start thinking multiplication. There is no way. Well, they're in my first year. Well, they're in my second year. Well, they're, okay, how? It just doesn't work. So what happens is that group stays together the next year and the next year, and we may add a couple, but there's no way to really think in terms of harvest.
The main issue is just childcare.
I know it is. I know it is.
We have chosen couples for now just because our kids are so little.
I know it. And but I'm just saying it wrecks multiplication, you know, and it, you know, I'm just saying it can't do what we're trying to do. It certainly solves the problem of child care. And I don't know how to, maybe something that our leadership needs to think about is there a way to have a child care, you know, in the evening when the men's groups meet or one morning or some, is there any way to do that? If not, you know, we've seen groups that would do things like, we're staying out this week and we're going to do the child care, and then I'll stay out and we'll do the child care, and you know, but it is a hard challenge, but it doesn't give people the experience of disciples. It's kind of like the experience you had. You say, well, we're not multiplying. It's not, well, why? Because we can't, because of our children. So it's a different type of group at that point. So I don't have an answer, but I just know, don't think that is a way to do it and it's no big deal. It is, you're losing something big. You're gaining something, but you're losing something. So just be aware of that, okay?
I had a question about the number in the group, because some of the other teaching is that six is really kind of the right number, especially if you're doing, you know, weekly phone calls, individual meetings, things of that nature. And apparently there have been some studies that say six is kind of the right group. I don't know. I'm just getting the teaching. So then when you say, you know, we're talking 9 to 11-ish, I feel like my group is full at 7, and you're challenging me because it sounds like you think we could have more people in our group.
You know, I think you gain something, you lose something. Obviously, if you got 3 people coming out a year, there's a more likelihood you've got 1 or 2 that are going into discipleship the next year. And I need to add here, discipleship does not mean just adult discipleship. I tell them you can go into youth or children discipleship. So there's your option to go into any of those arenas. So please hear that. But if you go into a larger number, then you've got, like this year, I've already contacted one of my guys who came into my second, it came in this last year to be a third year. He moved out of Perimeter, he moved up to North Carolina, and then came back. He'd been in discipleship, but he said, and I had a year open, we were talking, he said, can I get in discipleship somewhere? You think I could get in for at least a year to get, and I said, you know, I've got a spot open for 1 year. Would you come in to be that third year leader? He said, yes, he would. Well, I happened to have, last year, led 3 guys to the Lord that were just baby Christians. They all 3 came into my group as new Christians, and they needed more attention. So this guy came in the same year as these 3. So I had 4 first year guys. Now, one of them was really in their third year, but it was the first year to be in my group. And so I challenged him to stay on for the next 2 years, and would he be their overseer? Would he work with those 3? And so what I like to do, and it works out different every year, and some years it just doesn't work as well as others, but if I have two guys come in per year, And that's the first year. Then the second year, they come down and I take in two new guys. And then if those two still continue, they come down and two new guys. So here's what I call my rookie, my veteran, and my assistant leader. Well, these guys, they bring in the new guys to be in their group. So let's say if I just have two, two, and two, and sometimes that changes. Like last year, I brought in three new guys because I had three baby Christians that just come to the Lord. And I said, man, I want all three of you in my group, so we'll just change this a little bit. And then one guy, by the way, this year is not going to be in it, so I'm back to my two because he got a job change, and now he cannot come on Monday evenings when we meet. He has no capability. He's traveling every Monday, so I go, okay, you're out of the group, so I'm back down to my two. But then if they get... If this one gets two and this one gets two, well, now I've got 10 people in my group. And that's the way the 10 comes about. But these guys are taking care. I just really have the four in my mind. And so you got two and you got two, and I only got four that I need to be in close contact with. So that makes it workable to me. I don't want to build too big a biblical case on this, but we do know that Jesus had 12. We know that, you know, he didn't have a phone, so they seemed to stay with him most of the time, but which made it a little bit easier, quite frankly, I think. But if you look at the order, and I have not really studied this on my own, but many of you know the name Archie Parrish, and a great spiritual leader in his 80s. He was in the Marine Corps. And he said, doing a study on the order of the disciples in each account in Scripture, if you'll look at it, you will notice that the order is arranged. And I can't remember exactly how it was, but it was in groups of four, three groups of four. Though the order of those four might mix, they were always in the four. He said in the Marines, some of you may say this is wrong. I've never been in the military. But that everything is done in quads. They have four. Is that right? Anybody know?
Fire team.
They call four and a fire team. And they stick to those four. They always cover each other's back. They're always in the know. They always train together. And I don't remember all the details. But that there was something about the quads there, the fire team, whatever you want to call them. And he says, it's interesting, Peter, James, and John were apparently the leaders. The way the order comes, it's just assumed that each one of them were looking after three people. Isn't that interesting? And how many times do you see Jesus with just Peter, James, and John? I think what was happening there is he was saying, you know, Peter, you've got your three. James, John, each one of you. I'm over all of you, yes, but I'm going to invest a little bit more in you three, and you three invest in them, okay? And I think that's, you know, that's maybe the way it was planned to work.
Mm-hmm. Randy, I'd like you to address these three scenarios. Second to third year people, they're about to enter your third year, so they're going to bring people into the group and multiply. First scenario, those third-year people, they're unhealthy. They're not really dealing with sin in a proper way. They've got some major issues that are going on in their life. How would you deal with those people? Should they still bring people in? Should you give them responsibility? Or should you really deal with their major sinful issues?
Okay, good question. Let me hit that first.
Okay.
I would say, no, I would not have them bring somebody in, you know, if they're in that situation, because you're not wanting to multiply something that's very dysfunctional. We're all dysfunctional, but something that's extremely dysfunctional, you're just going to multiply the dysfunction by starting groups like that. So I would pull back and say, I don't tell everybody you need to be starting a group next year. I tell some, I don't think you're really ready. I don't think this is the right thing. Now, many of those people, by the way, some of those people that aren't ready will never be ready. And the reason they won't be ready is not because of spiritual issues, but because of personality issues. There are some people that just would never be attractive leading a group. They just don't have the charisma or the competencies. It doesn't have to do with spirituality. You know, it's just other issues. I don't know that I can recall anybody in my group that has met that situation
that at the same time wouldn't have been outstanding either with children or with youth. Sometimes even better because of those issues. I can't explain. One guy I think about right now, I go, this guy could never lead adults. And he was a Pied Piper to kids. They just, kids loved him. He was a bit childish, a little bit, but they just loved him, you know. So, no, I would not multiply that.
Second scenario you just addressed on is all three of your guys, let's say, come in third year, and all three say, I'm going to do second graders next year, and fourth year I'm going to do sixth graders, I'm going to do ninth graders. So they're bringing no one into your group, but they said, hey, they're going to give their life away. So you just kind of clarify that. You would handle it and say, well, come on in. That's wonderful. How are you praying for those? Have you contacted the youth, children, that kind
of thing? Exactly. Just make sure they're following on. And you got some people who just won't do anything. Even though they say they're going to, they get into the third year. Oh, yes, I'm going to do it. And then they get there, and I call them in June. Oh, you got a group? Nope, I don't have a group yet. But I'll have one in July. You got a group? No, I'm really. And then in August, you know what? This is not going to be a good year for me. Maybe next year. And I say, you're just doing a bailout. I know what's happening. Hmm. Yeah.
And then the last one, say three guys come in, and they say, well, Randy, I really feel called to pour my life into Live, Work, and Play. I've involved in these three different ministries. I'm helping with community outreach. I'm out on the global team. And so that's where I'm going to multiply. It's not going to be really discipleship with children and adults, but that's where I'm going to get my life away to.
Yeah. And for them, I would say, that's fine. You know, I'm not saying everybody's got to do this the rest of their life. Not at all. But I would say, let me hold this spot for the third year. Let me hold this for somebody who will come in and get prepared so that next year they will start a group. 2 years, great. I'll take it. That's why you got that opportunity at the end of 2 years to say, I am or I'm not. That's okay. But time to move on. Mm-hmm.
That person then that you've asked to leave the group, basically, they're really serving. Where I feel like we have sometimes a lot of lonely people that, mm-hmm. How are they supposed to find their place, their home at Perimeter? Like, this is like if a tragedy happened in their life.
All right, great question. What about one of these people who says, I want to, my ministry's in Live, Work, and Play, my ministry's here, my ministry's there, and so forth? One, those ministries very often become the best places to find that care. Working in children's ministry. Carol would say, man, I find a lot of close relationships just working in children's ministry. But if they don't find, maybe their work, their ministry is primarily in their office place where they're really digging in and trying to, they don't have spiritual people to be around them and all. They need to get in a small group. That's why we have small groups. I never tell churches, you need to have discipleship and not small groups. You need to have small groups for people that they can find companionship and love and care if that's what really they're looking for, and not the spiritual formation. Or I don't have the time for the spiritual formation. There's an hour and a half of outside work to do every week. No, I don't want that. Okay, you need to get in a small group. So we have both small groups and we have discipleship. But if we just allow discipleship to be any and everything, then it becomes nothing. It's just another small group. So we kind of keep small groups, and we have multiple types of small groups. Get in one of those, help them find it, but discipleship wouldn't be the place if you can't be a part of it. But go ahead. I know you're thinking something, so ask what you're thinking. Microphone. Where are those small groups? All right, I'm going to let Jay answer that.
I know I speak for Jamie Smith on the women's side and the men's, but I will admit to you, I would love to get more calls from the men who run into situations like that, and I'll tell you, I don't. I get calls from the leaders who are looking for new men, but I don't get a reciprocal call about, here's a situation I have, and it's the stakes are high, and it's relational, and I need some counsel. So Jamie and I open our doors. Reach out to us. I would love to see a pollination of leadership with the staff and open up and let's counsel and let's talk. There are groups here and there is a home for everybody, but we have to work together.
So what we're saying is if you'll let the staff know, and particularly Jamie or Jay, any of you that have somebody like that, we've got area groups still. We've got home fellowship groups going. We now have supper clubs going. There's so many different types of small groups that people are in. They're numerous, and we say, fine, bless them, but it's different than discipleship.
And for those individuals, the Stevens
All right, and people have individual needs, Stephen's ministry. Very good. And since you raised that, that's a good point. Do you understand that there's certain people that should not be in discipleship at this time because of their life crises? What happens is if you bring somebody that is the wound is too fresh and too open and too painful, what happens is the whole group spends all night or all morning listening to and comforting and caring. And that's why we have a lot of different ministry groups that are called support groups. Support groups are designed for people that are not ready for the main menu of discipleship. They need to get over here and get some healing, to get some special attention to their unique need. And that group is designed for that, and it works well for that. But if you take a person who's not in an open wound, hard, and you put them in one of those support groups, they go, this isn't working for me. Same way is true when you bring them into a discipleship, it doesn't work. So that we need to have two types of groups for that. There's complexity again, by the way. Yeah. All right.
Randy, I have a quick question. Thinking adult discipleship here, apparently, but when it comes to the youth, the middle school, high school level, is there a plan or have there been discussions of taking this model, mentoring, training younger kids, younger leaders, so as they go into high school and even to the college level, take this model to the school systems?
Our discipleship is being revamped totally right now for junior and senior high. We're not pleased with where it is. We're working curriculum, working leadership training. We're trying to hire somebody right now that we think is going to be a person that is really excellent at helping adult leaders who are going to be the leaders of the discipleship. And so it's on a big revamp right now. The children ministry is far ahead of the youth right now. But it's coming. And we'll get there. All right. Maybe
Randy,
the last question here.
Are you asking the leadership of this church to be involved in a journey group, to assist in a leadership role in that journey group, or to lead a group themselves? At what level are you looking for in terms of involvement?
Oh, we're looking for all those levels of involvement. In fact, that's what you're going to see tomorrow night. Keep in mind, tomorrow night's orientation. I hope you'll bring your group to orientation, and then you can break out and be alone and talk and get to meet new people and each meet their own folks this week or next week. That's what that's going to be, and there will be people there who are not in groups. There'll be probably a few hundred people that are coming saying, you know, and there we can say to them, we need to know, have you had experience in leadership of groups? Do you need to be in a group? You know, do you need to be preparing to lead a group and so forth?
So just to follow up, people that are coming in, they may come in as a rookie, even though they're leaders in the church.
Mm-hmm.
You're not necessarily looking at bringing them in as a leader.
Oh, no. If they've not been in a group, they wouldn't be a leader of a group they've never been in. And just seeing Peyton as he asked that question, I'm not saying this just because Peyton is here, but it reminds me that I would want to say this. I give this lecture around the world about discipleship. I mean, the things I'm talking about now and how to do it and all this. And when it comes to the question about who was it? Was it you that asked a question about outside people? Who were talking about bringing someone from outside the group? Yeah, it was you. I would make an exception in a few places. And I give the illustration of what Peyton has done. He has found a target group. It happens to be not live and work, but where he plays, a social club organization, where he's saying, God, I want to change this place. I want to see people come to faith. And so that's the whole focus. Everyone comes in his group, and we don't have those many people in our church, you know, from that. So he is literally, and he's taking the younger generation in that club, trying to say, let's win them. And God's just doing a fabulous work there, multiplication. In fact, I use his story of multiplication. You started the first year with how many? Seven? You had 10 the first year?
Yeah.
10, and how many do you have now? This coming year, how many are we going to have? 50 this year. And I say, you just bring them in from wherever, you know, because that's part of your, huh? And 25 wives are in groups. So all that's happened through multiplication in just a 3 years now? 3 years. So it's amazing how it's just, but that's because it came out of a little focus. So somebody might have a neighborhood group, you know, or something that you say, okay, there's a little unique there. But just in terms of, you know, I'll take somebody from here and I'll take somebody from there, that's what I was really addressing, not the a focus in a particular area. Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow night, and then make up the next Monday night. Let me encourage you, bring as many of your troops as you can. Have them there, and even if you need to be there both weeks with them, you know, some of you can't do that, but just make sure your people get there because we want to make a good orientation. I think the key, I tell this all over the world while I speak, the key to a great group is an appropriate orientation. You orient well, you get a good group. That's just amazing, all right?
How often when you have somebody that is leaving your group to start it, do they take somebody that came in your group because they brought them in, you know, like a previous year?
Yeah, usually always. Oh, I mean, that's the way. When they bring somebody in, it's to go out with them.
So typically will be two guys go together and are starting to...
Yeah, and they start. That's kind of the core of their new group. So they're not alone. They've got somebody with them as they go out. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right?
Randy, is this intended to work with the Journey curriculum? Because I know there's other groups that do book studies or whatever. If they're using multiplication, is that okay? Or are you wanting it to with Journey
curriculum? Well, good. Does it matter what weaponry they use? We think the weapons are important. If we thought they were using something that truly was giving them the type of things broadly, if you look at what we're doing, it's not just the truth content. There is equipping for evangelism, there is serving, there's the issues of live, work, and play, there's prayer issues. There's so many things we're putting in there. And we can't train this person. You're talking about multiplication. We're doing all the training we can, just trying to keep it at a decent level. But we can't, okay, we're going to train over here in this book, and we're going to train in this book, using this book, and we're going to train. You got to say, here's the weaponry we use, and we're going to offer training in it where it gets better and better, and you've had it done with you. And then rather than we change every year and we go to next to next, that to me is not. And, you know, the old story that I use about how we came to the journey is what gives me a sense of rise up and fight to hold it, because I saw, if you remember the story of how I took all the, most of y'all heard the story how we came up with the curriculum, and I saw all these many, many subject matters that I felt were so important that I had to delete from the list. And I had to take 7 weeks and cut it down to 4 weeks on the ones we held on to. And my heart got jealous for the great important truths so that the best isn't replaced by good. And that's what happens often. Like if somebody said name of a book, if it be a good book like Man in the Mirror that a lot of men use, Man in the Mirror would not have come in my first 8 years of curriculum. If I had 8 years to work with guys, Man in the Mirror would probably be in year 12 or 15. Why would I take that to replace something that would be in my first and most important things that I want somebody to learn? So that's why we'd rather use the same equipment.
Okay, so what if you have a group and you've been together and now you want to start this? How do you determine who would be your rookie and who would be your veteran?
Great question. I'm glad you asked that. That did not come up in the first. If you've got a group of, let's say, six people, let me just use your group. Do you have a group with a number of people now?
I think this year we'll either have four or five coming back.
All right, let's say you've got five people coming back. Or let's say four people coming back, to be fair. You got four people coming back, and you say, all right, I want to bring in two new people this year, ideally. So you know the two are simple. They're going to be your first year, so they're going to be your rookie, right? That's easy. But now you've got four people of which what are you going to do with them, you know? And let's make it even more complicated. You got six people. If you got six people now, what I'd be doing was saying, well, you know, you three or you two or you whatever the number are, you've been walking with the Lord longer, you've had more equipping opportunity and so forth. Would you be open to being assistant leaders to me this year and thinking about a third year? And then would you guys, would you just be in your second year? That'd be normal, it's their second year anyway. And I would just ask them to go into roles. I train in discipleship all over the world now, you know, wherever we go. And whenever I train, I say, start your group, going to find a few people, maybe in your church, that are very mature, and they just need equipping as to how to lead. 1 year is enough to do that. Let them experience a full year. And then say, you're coming in for 1 year. And then go to somebody else and say, I'm going to ask you if you'd be in my group 2 years. And then go to a couple and say, would you be in my group 3 years? And you start it up day one with the class system. Just go ahead and start it that way. Somewhere you have to start it that way. And just designate and ask if they'd be open and willing. Okay?
I have a question. It's processed, totally processed. Okay. I went on the website last night and had to pay $15 to look at the discipleship curriculum or to, you know, print it off, even to look at it.
Not to look at it.
I couldn't get to it without getting my
credit card. We've got
samples.
You can go on and get samples, right, Jay? Yeah, you can go on free and get samples from each of the thing, and so you can see what the material looks like and all that.
But I was surprised. I've never had to do this, and now I need to tell each of my girls they have to pay $15, right?
Right.
Okay.
Now, that's pretty expensive for a year.
Well, I understand. But
we do have, if somebody says, I can't pay $15, we will pay it for them. There will not be anybody left out for that reason. We're doing that. The expense of what we're doing is fairly significant. And there's no money to be made. We're trying to recoup some of the costs and expense of what we're trying, the materials we're putting out, and the things we're doing. And so that's the whole thing. We don't think there is a person in America that's in a small group that's not spending $15.
Right.
They're going out and they're buying a $25 book for this 6 weeks, then they're buying a $20 book for that 6 weeks. And when you see all the amount of material that people are getting and the type of, and the CDs and the, for $15, and I would just, if somebody pushes back hard on the 15, just ask, do they go play golf?
Have one girl who I don't want to ask to spend the 15.
Let the church pay for that then.
Okay, so how do I do that?
You want to answer that, or you want me to guess it at the answer, who to go to? I mean, I don't know who to go to, but I can tell you how to.
Contact Jamie on the women's side or Jay on the men's side.
Yeah. There will be one who truly can't afford it. But that's now happening globally, so that anybody using it anywhere to be able to subscribe is $15 a year, which we just think is as base dirt cheap as you can possibly imagine. So it's basically every module, they're paying $1 per module. And we think that's pretty inexpensive, you know. So let's pray. Thank you, Father, for this time, and ask that you would allow us to watch you do great things this year through discipleship. May lives be changed. May your kingdom come, even because of what we do. In Jesus' name, amen. Do we need any sign up for people to say, I'll do it this way or that way? Or we just let it run. Tell me, is that what we want to do?